This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by MHA of Dutchess County, Foman Wash Car Wash, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman Kleiman Collins and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, Prime Storage, and Walsh Valuation.
We're all just an arm's length away from any tragedy at any time, and any circumstance could be ours. No one is immune. No one's immune. When you're in survival mode, you cannot think beyond the moment that you're in. It's not the joy of living in the moment, it's the overwhelming idea that there's nothing else but this moment, and it's a terrible moment because I'm trapped in it, because I'm addicted, I'm homeless, I'm probably dirty, probably hungry. The shame and guilt is outrageously dense, and if I could be anywhere other than here, that would be great. My name is Kara Mia Bakayoki, and I'm the founder of Hope on a Mission. My job is to show up and show hope. You know, so many volunteers are committed because of the joy it brings them to give joy to someone else. Just the joy they have in ladling out a scoop of food and making eye contact and saying, good to see you today. The people who are coming up for a meal are hot, tired, maybe feeling really broken, maybe it's a good day. Those two groups of people meet in that tray. We do good things and we do them well, and it makes a difference in people's lives.
Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, coming to you from the MHA studios, and we got a great episode for you guys today. It is cold out there. And yeah, I know, right? Yeah. It is very cold out there, and for many of us, we're very lucky that we have a spot that we can call home and that we can feel warm, we can feel safe, and we can feel rested. But you know what? There's a lot of people out there that don't have that luxury. And especially when you're in, you know, below freezing temperatures and actually below zero temperatures at this point.
It's negative four. Today.
We got to really look into the people that have those kinds of issues. And it's for all different reasons, and it may not be the reasons that you think. So with us today, from Hope on a Mission, serving the homeless and addicted with compassion, grace, and love, in the heart of Poughkeepsie, New York, we have with us Kara Mia Bakayoki. Kara, how are you? Kara Mia. Kara Mia is the full first name.
Yes. Yep. I'm well, and I'm warm, thank you. Last night, not so much. We were out in the street with doing one of our pop-up provisions, and we were serving food on not cleared off sidewalks because of the amount of snow we've recently had.
Yeah.
And battling shop owners who say that we can't set up in front of their space even though it's public property.
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, we serve the people who everybody else looks over.
Yeah, no, because I was just looking at your Facebook before we got going today, and I was looking at it and I saw the videos you were posting of you guys being there. God bless y'all for being out there in that cold.
Cause
I've had to do a number of events recently, and when I'm loading my car in and out, it's rough.
It's
like
brutal.
I'm still wearing gloves, but my hands are freezing and red and hurting by the end of it.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine what you're feeling, but I can only imagine what the people that you're serving are feeling.
Yeah. So a lot of it, that's a big part of why we do what we do, no matter what.
Yeah.
That's why we make sure, because, excuse me, there are many people. I think annually in January, Dutchess County does a count, or the state does a count. We run around 300 people who report that they are homeless. They're without housing, proper housing. They might use the shelter system. They may be trying to stay in a tent. So Saturday night, we had a group of three that were staying in a tent, but eventually it got too cold, and one of our community members ended up in the ER because of frostbite. But then once he was treated, he was released, and then they kicked him out of the waiting room.
Yeah.
You know, so where do I go next? The shelters are crowded. The warming centers are crowded. I don't know how, but they – well, probably because fire code, right? They can only have X amount of bodies in a space at a time, so they say they're full, and you get turned away.
Yeah.
And that's – when you go to the one place that you're looking for warmth – and you get turned away, where do you go next?
And it's a very difficult thing.
Yeah. So Dutchess County government has a list, though.
Yeah. And it's a good thing that what you're doing, you're offering hot meals, you're offering a variety of different things to people, which is very important. It's like,
yeah.
You have something like this. I'm not making a joke out of this by any means. I am just using a visual for people out there.
Yeah.
The film Groundhog Day. I think of the old man that Bill Murray's character constantly tries to save.
Okay.
The elderly homeless person that, and I, the scene of him unfortunately freezing to death comes to my mind.
I don't remember movies, so I can't help you. But it's I all understand good. What you're saying.
It's
yeah.
all good. For anybody out there, and you know, this being February, this is coming out in February.
Okay.
You know, Groundhog Day, of anybody who just watched that, that's the scene that comes into
stuck
my
for
mind.
You.
Okay. And I see the snowdrifts that we have right now.
Yeah.
And even before this interview, before this was even set up, I was thinking that.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy crap, like, could there be somebody underneath one of these? Could there be an issue? Could somebody be freezing right now? Like, what is happening? So, as you said, you're out here in the cold. You're doing this 365. This is all year round. But
52 weeks a year, no matter what.
But let's talk about right now, since we are in the cold of winter, why is this so important to do these pop-up provisions right now? Actually, what is exactly the pop-up provision and what do you offer for anybody who's unaware of what you guys do?
Sure. So I'll start by saying, excuse me, that all of this is all of this is informed by my own experience of being homeless and addicted.
Mm.
Back in the 80s, I came into Poughkeepsie from Connecticut to attend Chrysler Business Institute. I came from a home that regularly used alcohol and marijuana.
Mm.
Nobody really ever faced their own problems, and nobody ever checked in with me to see what how I was feeling about stuff. We just naturally picked up drinks and drugs because that was the family culture. Unfortunately or fortunately for me, that took me out of myself. Well, I was already out of myself. So truth be told, it took me further down the path of disconnection.
Gotcha.
And so the further disconnected I came from myself and community, the easier it was to slide down the dark hole into and accept less and less every time. Like the movie Groundhog Day, when you become addicted, it's that alarm goes off at 6 a.m. and it's the same freaking day again.
Yeah.
And I have to go out and find more. If I'm addicted to a substance that creates a physical addiction, like an opiate, then I need to find enough to just get me back to zero because I start out at a negative. I have to get to zero, and then I can start to operate maybe as a typical human in my own body.
Yeah.
My typical, not a, you know, general typical.
Yeah. What is general typical though? But I get what you're saying.
But so we understand in the Western Hemisphere, in America, in New York, in Poughkeepsie, that general is like I wake up and I have a warm house, maybe.
Yes.
I have at least bedding to stay warm in, and maybe you don't have heat right now because that's true for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I've got layers of clothes. I'm still indoors.
Yeah.
And maybe I have friends that I can go to who they have heat. Or I can turn, we say not to do it, but we all do it, turn the oven on to heat the house.
Oh, yeah.
No. You know, run the shower to heat the bathroom, and then we all huddle in the bathroom. I've done all of these things either when I couldn't afford to pay my bills or when I became homeless and I was struggling. And, you know, you find a place.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you run into the McDonald's bathroom and you turn the hot water on and you just warm your hands up a little bit. So of course I get off on a tangent and then I don't know what
you're
I'm saying.
Good.
It's all good. So anyway, back to, when I was struggling with homelessness and addiction and suffering all the things, that was actually training. It was information to become the woman now that I get to be.
Yeah.
And so all of what we do is informed by my own experience. So the things that I couldn't do for myself, I couldn't feed myself, I couldn't clothe myself, barely take care of my hygiene. My addiction took me so far away from taking care of myself that I didn't take care of myself, and then I couldn't take care of myself. So having a space, be it on a sidewalk or in a building or wherever, where I could, without shame or guilt or remorse, show up and say, I need panties. I need baby wipes, because these things didn't even exist back in the 80s. There was no such thing as baby wipes. There was no bottled water. There were no cell phones. You needed a quarter to call anybody from a payphone on the corner. So those are some comforts that appear now. Mm-hmm. But when it's 2 degrees or -2 degrees, a pack of baby wipes to wipe up my body in an alleyway or an abandoned house is probably going to be frozen.
Yeah.
Unless I've been able to keep it in my pocket. The items that we provide at our pop-up provisions, which are 4 meals a week.
Mm.
It's Tuesdays and Thursdays at 600 Main Street here in Poughkeepsie, from 6 to 7 p.m. If it's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday or a Thursday and the world hasn't blown up, we're there. Even during COVID, we were out.
God bless
we
you.
Made sure, because addiction doesn't know what time it is, what day it is, what season it is, and certainly not what the global climate is. Yeah. You know, I could barely think of things outside of myself. I have to go get more because I have to stay disconnected, because when I come down from wherever I've been in my drug of choice, the reality of the decisions I've made and the slow betrayal of myself is so overwhelming.
Mm, the way you just worded that, the slow betrayal of yourself.
Because wow. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And that's sort of what happens to human beings, without getting too philosophical.
Go right ahead.
Our humanity is based on how people treat us as children.
Oh, yeah.
I either am treated as a human being or I'm treated as less than a human being.
Yeah.
And because of my parents' circumstances and the way they treated themselves, for whatever their reasons were, they didn't have the gift of humanity to give to me. Mm. And so I didn't know that I had value because I had never been recognized or validated. Yeah. And so I carried that into, and then, you know, it was easy to just take a step down on the ladder of, what's the word I'm looking for? Self-worth.
Mm.
There's a word I want, but I can't think of it, and it'll hit me in a little bit.
Don't you hate when that happens?
No, I don't. No, actually, it's an opportunity to let things go. It's a good practice.
Wow.
If I let it go, it'll come back. If I search for it, then I can't find it. It's elusive.
Wow. Okay. This is awesome.
Yeah. So I just leave it. But anyway.
That's fantastic. So, you know, based on what you're saying there of that value, I think a lot of, what happens in our childhood affects us the rest of our lives. Reminds me of, I believe I'm getting the name of this book correctly. It's been a long time since I read it. A Boy Named It. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like that's, for anybody who's read that out there, that's a New York Times bestseller.
It's an owl. That's an owl. There's a couple of books. There's one called When Rabbit Howls.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that one.
Goosebumps,
Holy really.
A young man was treated less than on so many levels and kept in a closet under the stairs.
Mm.
And he dissociated into many personalities.
Oh.
And Rabbit was one of them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it's just frightening to read the book that other human beings behave in such a way that they invalidate a tiny human being so much so that that person literally fractures into many personalities. And each one of those personalities copes with whatever detriment is occurring at the time.
Mm. That sounds like an incredible book. I'd be very interested to read that too.
It's incredible. It blew my mind. A friend of mine was working as a social worker at Dutchess County Jail at the time. And she really, she's a social worker, and she specialized or was very interested in what's now called dissociative identity disorder or multiple personality disorder.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I read like Sybil and Three Faces of Eve.
Oh, yes.
And I was always like, I want to be her. Who says that?
But I'm sure
it was interesting to know that people could disconnect, not knowing that I was already disconnected.
Well, yeah, probably saw the mirror. You were looking into a mirror when reading those things. And I think that leads into the thing that I really want to ask here. When you're speaking, I was speaking with, working with, giving out resources to people out there on the streets, how often do you feel like you are seeing a mirror of a past self with some of these people you interact with?
Every single person I interact with was me. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I see myself in every face, but I also see my present self in their face.
Mm.
And that's who I speak to.
Mm.
I speak to you. I've been you. You can be me.
That's a beautiful way of looking at it. I think that's lovely.
That's Jesus.
That is Jesus.
That's the whole reason I get to do what I get to do, because I was there and now I'm here, and my faith is what got me here. Mm-hmm. But my faith is what kept me alive. Well, I didn't have a lot of faith then. But God's who kept me alive during that.
Yeah.
There's a book called Purpose Driven Life.
I've heard of it. Haven't read it yet.
By Pastor Rick Warren. You don't have to be a Christian to read it, but it helps if you have any idea of faith.
Yeah.
The very first, it's a 40-day journey, like many 40-day journeys in the Bible.
Yep.
The very first chapter, you read one a day. The first chapter is you were created by God and for God. You're not here for yourself. You're not here for your parents. You're not here for your husband or wife or children. You're here because he wants you here. And that at the beginning of this journey in recovery, which I just celebrated 13 years on Wednesday.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So in 2013, I found myself sitting in the same jail cell I left in 1990.
Oh, wow.
And all of this, that's when I was just like, all right, dude, talking to God. All right, dude, I'm done. I thought I knew shit. Here I am. 23 years after leaving this very same jail cell, I'm sitting in the same jail cell. How did I get here? What did I do wrong? Let's look back. Let's reflect. Let's figure it out. And he was like, well, you left me. You walked away from me in 1990, and I've been waiting for you the whole time. I've been loving you and holding you safe, and you know, and you've been running around like a crazy person. And I was like, oh, well, I'm done.
Well, very similar to the story of the prodigal son, how it is going out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. And every one of us, we were created by God and for God, and we all go off on this little tangent, this little stray path, but he designs that. He allows that. And every single thing that I've been through was part of the plan.
Yeah.
Whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
And it was, some of it was horrible, but to get, if I had to do it all over again, I would absolutely relive all of it, because where I am now is so beyond amazing, beyond my imagination, beyond anything I ever thought of or dreamed of as a child or as an adult, or the days that I was in the street hoping for, you know, Pretty Woman. I was waiting for my knight in shining armor to show up. You know, I was using my body to get money for drugs, or just drugs, whatever.
Yeah.
So when Pretty Woman came out is when I was first in recovery, the first time around. And I was like, oh, that's my story. You know, except I didn't have Richard Gere or any guy with his money. But I had enough. I had a guy who had enough money to support me and let me find recovery for a while.
Well, that's great.
And I married him.
Oh,
and I had babies.
That's fantastic. That's beautiful, man.
So my story's all over the place. But anyway.
No. I think that's beautiful. There's a number of things that you said that want to take in a couple different directions.
Okay.
This one, I might get some heat for this. We'll see.
Let's do it.
So a little background on me. I grew up Catholic. I went to Catholic school. I wouldn't consider myself Catholic anymore, but I do still have faith.
Yeah.
It's more in, I've lost faith in a structure, in the human side of it. Like
the indoctrination.
The indoctrination of it. But still have faith in it all. And as I've been going on my faith journey, and I think this is clear to a lot of people these days, I would love to hear your opinion. I think there's a divide between a true follower of Christ, whether you actually believe in Christ or not. I think you can live a Christ-like life.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the quote-unquote American Christian. And what I say by that American Christian, they will talk a good talk, but they will never be out on the streets doing what you're doing.
So religion versus spirituality.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's in my journey, my foundational faith. When I was a kid, my mom was a WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. She was, you know, she called herself a Wiccan on occasion, but she didn't have any faith in God that I was aware of and that I recall at all.
Yeah.
Her parents didn't go to church. There was none of that. My birth father, my natural father, who was in my life until I was about 7, and then my parents divorced, that was the Italian Catholics.
Yep.
So I was baptized at 8 weeks old, and I had all of that going on. Then my mom married a second Italian Catholic, and I got my first.
She had a type.
And so did he, because he's got 3 blonde wives.
Oh, jeez.
Next. Anyway, so I was a seeker as a kid. I remember being 5 years old and playing on the sidewalk out in front of our house and squishing ants with my finger and feeling a larger presence, a higher being beyond the clouds, saying, thinking like, oh, I'm doing that to the ants. What? There's somebody who could do that to me.
Yeah.
But of course, I was doing a bad thing. I was just being a kid. You know. But I recognized that I'm bigger than this. There's something bigger than me.
Yeah.
And not really, you know, 5, not having a full understanding of that. But I remember that happening and then sort of sent me on a trajectory to, well, what if there's something bigger than me? What's it like? Where is it? Who is it? What is it?
Yeah.
And so I ended up sort of, as I had a little more autonomy, 11, 12, 15 years old, I would go to church with families. It's like, oh, you go to church? I went to temple. I've done, you know, I've hit all the bases on different faith traditions, I call them.
Yeah.
When I was in jail for the month of, I was in jail in 1990 from February to June. Well, Ramadan happened in that month. So I became a Muslim. I was a Muslim for a month. But I learned some things, you know, so everything was just this little journey of a discovery.
Yeah.
What I learned in non-denominational Christian church is that it's a relationship, not a religion.
Mm, yeah.
What I learned in parenting is it's relationship, not rules.
Mm.
If I have a relationship with my children, then they're going to want to please me. If I'm just running around with rules and banging them in the head with rules, then they're going to rebel.
Yeah.
Rules equal rebellion. Relationship does not.
No.
I mean, it's going to be a little bit.
There's going to be always some
right,
give and
no
take.
There's no perfect thing.
But
yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Exactly.
That's when you can actually nurture something, and that's when something positive can come out of it.
Right. And again, it's connection.
Yeah.
So connection to my higher power, connection to my children, connection to my community.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
This winter and holiday season, let's remember something simple but powerful. Check in on your neighbors. A quick hello, a phone call, or even a smile can make a world of difference. This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at Mental Health America of Dutchess County. When we reach out, we're not just helping others, we're helping ourselves. Staying connected is one of the best ways to boost our mental health and well-being. At Mental Health America of Dutchess County, we believe in building a community where no one feels alone. So take a moment today. Make sure you pass along a kind gesture, because kindness is contagious and connection matters. Who knows, maybe that person you made smile will do the same to somebody else. From all of us at MHA of Dutchess County, we wish you the happiest of holidays. And remember, we want you to be your best you possible.
For 60 years, we here at Foam and Wash Car Wash pride ourselves on giving back to the community, because we're your neighbors. It's our community too. In celebration of Foam and Wash's 60th anniversary, we want to say thank you. By visiting the link on screen and in the description, you'll receive one free Hot Wax and Shine car wash. No hassles, no gimmicks, just a token of our appreciation. Foam and Wash Car Wash, home of the Unlimited Wash membership. Thank you for being part of Foam and Wash Car Wash's story for the last 60 years.
Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
Walsh Wednesday wants to give a big thank you to Prime Storage. A temporary storage unit can help declutter a home, protect fragile items during a busy period, and provide a convenient way to organize and transition belongings. Whatever the reason, Prime Storage makes storage simple through seamless service, flexible rental options, and facilities conveniently located throughout the United States and Canada. By using our link in the description of this episode, you will get one free month of storage, plus you'll save 15% on rental rates. Make the holiday season simpler and store with Prime Storage. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show. And play. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by MHA of Dutchess County, Foam and Wash Car Wash, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape, LLP, Attorneys at Law, Prime Storage, and Walsh Valuation.
When I was a child, when I saw somebody who was homeless, for whatever reason, I don't know where I got this concept from, I figured that there was something scary or something bad. Or I don't know why I had that perception
probably,
when I was younger.
Right.
But when I got older, you know, that changed because I had context.
Right.
Kind of you with the ants hear me getting the context now.
Right.
So when you're out there and you're providing for the homeless community out there, What is it that you would like to tell people out there listening who, you know, probably who have never been homeless? What's misconceptions about the people that you are constantly serving?
We're not out to get you. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to knock you out. I'm not going to, I'm actually terribly ashamed of my situation. I'm afraid you're judging me at every moment because I'm judging myself at every moment. And you know, a simple eye contact and a smile, just acknowledge my presence, acknowledge that I'm on the planet with you. Just allowing me to be seen helps me feel seen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe encourages me to make eye contact with someone else. But the hardest part about being, for me, I can only speak for me, the hardest part for me being homeless and addicted was the community, the people that were my peers, because mm-hmm. we're all homeless and addicted, is that there's no such thing as honor among thieves. We would steal from each other because mm-hmm. we're all living in lack. And there's a mindset that goes with living in lack, which is if I don't take it now, I'm not going to have it ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's, I believe, where people who have never been believe that we're going to come and take your stuff. And if you smile at me or if you make eye contact with me, I'm going to spit at you or I'm going to yell at you or I'm going to steal your purse. Yeah, that happens to people, from people on the side of homelessness and addiction. There's a mm-hmm. mental illness that goes with that. Sometimes we snarl. We're so uncomfortable in our bodies and our minds that it's hard to allow someone to be kind to us because we judge it. We're not sure that it's safe. We're not sure that you don't have bad intentions, that you're not going to spit on me.
Right.
Because that also happens.
Yep.
Right?
Yes, it has.
So what our community culture has created is a safe place for people to come, know that they're not being judged, know that we're going to meet their immediate needs for food and clothing and connection. I can't meet housing needs. There are housing places that do that.
Yep.
We are here to remind you that you are made in the image of God, that you are loved, that you are lovable, and no matter where you've been or what you've done does not mean you can't be better than what you have right now.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. That's great what you're doing out there. The fact that you're out there for multiple days a week, 365 days, you know, 52 weeks, I'm sure you see a lot of familiar faces, a lot of repeating people.
Yeah.
You talked about earlier about the connections, the relationships. What is it like when you do see somebody who, like yourself, you're watching them climb out of the hole?
We don't see a lot of people climbing out of the hole. We watch people show up in the street that we've never seen before, and we watch them slide down the slippery slope.
Oh, wow.
So when you were speaking about that, my brain was going to a couple of places. We have been serving in the streets of Poughkeepsie since 2015.
Okay.
So July, August of 2015 is when we started. So 10 years, almost, we're going on 11 years.
Yeah.
There were people that we served at the very beginning, and we were serving right up until last year. And there's four or five women who we served for 9.5 years who are now in recovery.
Beautiful.
They finally chose to get sober and get clean and make a difference in their own lives because they're the only ones who can.
Yeah.
Nobody could make me change what I was doing. The idea of leaving what I knew, even though it was awful,
mm-hmm.
for something unknown was so scary that I would choose to stay.
There's comfort in the discomfort.
Stockholm syndrome, you know, name it what you want to name it. When the discomfort becomes greater than the payoff is when we're ready to change.
Yeah.
For some people, that discomfort, we're disconnected
from
ourselves. So what does that discomfort look like? I don't even know. It depends. It's going to differ
depends
for everyone.
Every situation.
For me, it was being remanded to jail and sitting in that same cell that I'd left 23 years earlier. I was like, are you done running away from yourself?
Yeah.
And you can only run so far and you can hit the brick wall. Apparently, so what we say in the rooms of AA is that there are trap doors and then there's a trap door to the trap door.
Oh, gosh.
Because every time you get clean and sober, you learn something, you pick up, the remorse is greater. The self-loathing is greater because now I know better. Now I know better and I did it anyway. And now I want to kick my own ass. And now I beat myself up so much greater. And that's just, you know, it's Joyce Meyer wrote Battlefield of the Mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where all of this comes from. It's all in our brains.
No, it's without a doubt all in our brains. And it's whatever It has to do with the environment we have around us, what we consume, more than just food. It's everything
that
we consume,
right.
Everything.
Right.
Have all of that. You mentioned how you had those women after 9 years
finally
getting into recovery.
Themselves. Yeah.
But I still see that as an absolute win. Sure, that might have been 9 years of
they
doing
didn't die.
This. Yeah.
They didn't die.
Yeah.
Because how many, and this breaks my freaking heart. How many deaths?
Yeah.
In the 10 and a half years that we've been out there. How many deaths? When I started recovery in 2013, I went from jail in February of 2013 to transitional housing, which was run by Dutchess County Probation.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a secure place. And then I went off. So I was there for 60 plus days. Then I went to 70 days of inpatient treatment at St. Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
And then 90 days of a halfway house. Where was I going? What did we say just before this?
Well, we were talking about the deaths that you've seen within
that. Thank you. So when I came back to Poughkeepsie from St. Joe's inpatient and I was in Joseph's house, halfway house, mm-hmm. I entered the Dutchess County Intensive Treatment Alternative Program, which is ITAP. And that's mm-hmm. a program that's been running for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great program.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go, but when I got there, I realized, I'm learning so much because I have to sit still.
Yeah.
And I was in that program for 14 months. The first, I got there in July. I think fentanyl hit the streets in probably September or October of 2013. And within 6 weeks, we lost 9 people.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So there were only 58 people every morning in morning meeting. And then if somebody didn't show up, we were terrified that they had overdosed.
Yeah. You notice. You would notice when somebody's not
right.
There.
Right. And we're a community, right?
Yeah.
We have to face each other and ourselves every single day. And part of morning meeting was you say that you're there, you state your recovery date, and then you state something you're grateful for or what you're struggling with or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, you shut down because there's an empty seat across the room from you again and again and again. It's not like somebody ran out and went to get high. It's like somebody freaking used last night and they died today or in the last 12 hours. We left at 1 o'clock yesterday. It's 9 a.m. Where's that body?
Yeah.
Well, it's in a morgue. And that was terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. And it was heartbreaking. And I just, anyway.
No, but it's reality.
Yeah. And so that was in 2013. And then it slowed down, thank God, because people were either using fentanyl test strips or they moved away from using heroin so much. I don't know. Because again, I was on the recovery side then.
Mm-hmm.
But over the next few years, fentanyl came and went.
Yeah.
People used it or didn't use it. Then it became being sought out.
Yeah.
And heroin you couldn't even find heroin anymore. It was all fentanyl out there. And the deaths continued. And then it was, this is January, 3 years ago this month, I lost 5 people in 1 month.
Mm.
I still work for Hudson River Housing at Rose Street as a recovery coach. And we had, at any given time, so real quick, Hudson River Housing created this program in collaboration with New York State called ESHI.
Yes.
It's Empire State. You know it?
I'm familiar, but tell them
right,
for them.
Right. So Empire State Subsidized Housing Initiative, ESSHI. And what that program does is it takes people who are chronically homeless due to mental health or addiction issues, which mental health and addiction is addiction is a mental health issue.
Oh, absolutely.
Next. And it provides them housing first. And then there's a contract that you sign that you agree to treatment and that helps you stay in housing. And then you're supported financially and all the other ways. And so I work there. But we opened in 2020. And a lot of spaces got filled. There are 78 apartments, 39 of them are studios, and they are subsidized by ESHI.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people were still active.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of bodies in the 5 years. There have been 10 or 12 deaths just in those houses over that time. And so, again, we can't save anyone. We can provide them the opportunity to connect with us, love them, meet them where they are, help them find their way back to a better life.
Yeah.
But it's a difficult task.
Oh, absolutely.
At best.
Absolutely. But it's
when it works,
yeah.
It's love.
Yeah.
It's joy.
And even when it's not making immediate results, but just the fact when you can just the fact that you can smile, you can offer the meal, and you see somebody the next day, and it's like,
you're still alive.
This is still pretty powerful.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. Yeah. If you're, when people say, well, Narcan, you're just helping them keep using. No, I'm helping them breathe. I'm helping them stay alive, because if I'm dead, I can't get recovery.
Yeah.
But if I'm breathing, if I'm alive, I can have another chance at recovery.
And that's beautiful. And that's the thing that, you know, we're always looking to do to grow and become better. With all the loss that you have experienced in your life, here you are still out on the streets helping people out and seeing this day in, day out. I thought I've had a lot of loss in my life. I can only imagine the loss that you've seen in your life. How does one cope with that amount of loss?
I recognize one of the things that God and I talked about when I was in jail in 2013 was he gave me a 30,000 foot view, right? So human beings have been human beings, and we've been doing human being things for thousands and eons, right?
Yeah.
Eons.
Yeah.
We have not annihilated ourselves or one another or the planet yet, because he's still in charge. And therefore, everything that happens is cyclical. So I have to accept, and that's what works for me, is that everyone has an end date, and it just looks different for everyone. And some of us participate in getting our end date sooner, and some of us have no control over our end date, and it still shows up.
Yeah.
But humanity is here, and we're not here, again, we're not here for ourselves. We're here as a collaboration of personalities trying to figure out how to help each other along. And when we're infighting, it's bad. And when we're loving each other, it's good.
Yeah. That's a very holistic way of looking at
things. Yeah. And so loss is going to happen. And it really sucks when it happens to you or me or anyone. It really, really sucks. But there's a purpose in that too. Because if I had never suffered a loss, how could I ever be compassionate to you in your loss?
Yeah.
So we're all here to help each other along the journey. And anything that happens, so this is what God said to me in 2013. He said, there's nothing that you're going to go through that other humans haven't made it through.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to be okay. There are going to be parts that really, really suck, but I'm actually going to be okay.
And I'm sure it makes you feel less alone.
Yeah. I don't get the I'm unique and special and nobody's ever felt the way I feel thing.
Yeah.
That goes away. And that's a really big part of the poor me victim story that we carry around as children of destruction.
Yeah.
That's a great – that just showed up.
Yeah.
Children of destruction. I felt like I was growing up in destruction. Did I suffer, you know, a war-torn city? No, but my household had a war.
Oh, yeah.
There was a war going on in my household, and there was a war going on, in my head.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, it's fascinating what a victim complex can create. I don't think that's the official term anymore, but that's the only one that comes to my mind these days. But
and I'm not shaming anybody who feels like the victim, because my shit was real when I was feeling like the victim.
Oh, yeah.
But when I built a fortress around myself, because look what happened to me.
Yeah.
And nobody understands, and nobody can help me. And that was really where I lived.
Yeah.
There was nothing you could tell me that was going to change my circumstances. I had to get there on my own.
A fortress is a great way of describing it, because it is putting up walls. It is.
And we think we're keeping ourselves safe, but we cut ourselves up from the world too.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about the connection aspect of all of this. And one of the things, well, you can't do a lot of Hope on a Mission without the volunteers that you guys have.
Right.
So
I can't do everything by myself.
Yeah. Let's talk about the volunteering aspects of all of that and the community that you've already grown, and to anybody out there who might be a future volunteer, what would you say?
Wow. That's a lot. Okay. All right. First and foremost, I want to recognize that the volunteers that come to serve, to provide their time, talent, and treasure to Hope on a Mission and to the community that we serve, are amazing human beings. They are selfless, and they are humble. They appreciate that they have a safe, warm place to live, and that they come from privilege. Mm-hmm. I'm privileged to have a home. I'm privileged to have a car that I can turn heat on, and I can afford to put gas in so that I can run the car and stay warm.
Yeah.
So we understand that we come from a place that affords us the ability to serve. So then we bring that heart, that open heart, and that open mind, and no judgment. And we bring whatever our gifts are. Everybody has different gifts. You have a gift of background stuff, right? You do social media, you do that kind of thing. My gift is connecting with someone, looking them in the eyes and saying, doesn't matter, I love you. I don't care what you look like or smell like or how you feel about yourself. I still love you. And you can have more than you're allowing yourself to receive.
Yeah.
Those are my words. That's what I give. That's what I bring to the table and my experience. There are people who cook. There are people who make peanut butter and jelly. There are people who make hot chocolate. I mean, I don't – when God gave this project to me, which he did, he gave me Hope on a Mission when I was on the mountain in Saranac Lake. He said, you're going to start a ministry. You're going to use all of the thing that – everything you've been through is training. It's called Hope on a Mission. He gave me the symbol for it. It was all Holy Spirit inspired. It was an amazing time on the mountain. And then what I've learned on the street is, you know, I showed up on the corner of Main and South Clinton with bottled water and a couple of flip-flops and a borrowed car because I didn't have anything, but I was told it was time to go. And so I went and I brought my daughter and she was 17 at the time and now she's 27 and it's what she knows, you know. Yeah. But I don't ask anybody to bring anything that they don't already, like bring your heart. Mm. Bring your open heart and open mind and empty hands. Let's just see what you do. So when people say, I want to volunteer, I say, come hang out with us. Mm-hmm. Come see what we do and ask the questions and be a part of, observe, because your heart will tell you what your part is. And that's how we get volunteers. They just show up and they go, oh, I know what I want to do. I like to make brownies. And mm-hmm. who doesn't love a brownie?
Right.
Everybody loves a home-cooked brownie. Yeah. So we have people that come with home-cooked brownies. We had a woman stop by a couple weeks ago and she said, what can I do? And I said, bake potatoes. It's cold. Bake potatoes, wrap them in foil. People can carry them in their pockets and then they can eat them.
Yeah.
And it'll warm up your hands. And so we had 20 pounds of baked potatoes last night. It's 2 degrees.
That's awesome.
We had 2 sheet pans full of wrapped baked potatoes. Do you want baked potato for your pocket or your tray? Oh, I want it in my pocket. Right?
Yes.
And it was just an amazing thing. Also, we have to remember that people who struggle with homelessness and addiction have a lot of dentition issues.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of oral health issues. I'm not your dentist and I can't fix your teeth, but I can make sure that the food I'm providing you is edible by you.
Yeah.
So small pieces, well cooked, you know, comfort foods, macaroni and cheese and beef stew all shredded up. And, you know, so people like to feed people.
Mm-hmm.
So those kinds of things. Hard boiled eggs. Mm. Great source of protein. Yeah. You don't need teeth.
I didn't think about that one, but that's
a good one. Well, these are some things that we've learned over time, right? Crunchy granola bars, no good.
No, peanuts, no good.
Peanut butter. We get loaves of peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
And people are like, can I have 4 peanut butter? Yes, you can. I'll give you as many. You know, and that's the other thing is we want to make sure that you get what you need and what you ask for. Mm. If we have it to provide, we will give it to you. So we've been serving, it's not 365 days a year, I will say, out in the street.
Oh, yeah.
However, if a person reaches out to me through Facebook or a phone call, which my number is a public number, it's out there, they can call or they can go to TJ Pizza mm-hmm. and say, call Karamia. And then anyone who walks in can have a slice of the soda.
Oh, that's awesome.
At any time. Unless, of course, I'm serving food across the street and then you have to go get food over there.
But that's
our
fair.
Our donors, everything is by donation. The food is by donation. What we do spend money on is things like chapstick and baby wipes and things that don't get donated regularly. But when mm-hmm. If we put a post out that we need things, people more than willingly fill in the gap. But our paper goods, our plastic bags, our compostable trays, and our forks. That's really what we spend our money on. And then feeding people with pizza or TJs. We also follow people through their journey. So when someone chooses recovery and they get into a local area, there's a lot of Oxford houses. Have you done an Oxford House interview yet?
No, not yet.
Son, we got to do an Oxford House interview because that's an amazing place.
Oxford House, okay.
Yep. So anyway, Oxford houses are peer-run sober housing.
Okay.
And there are now 5 in Dutchess County.
Oh, that's
they're all here in Poughkeepsie, actually.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. And it's a national program, and it's finally here, and there's a bunch in Goshen. They're everywhere. So anyway, when people get into sobriety, we'll help them there too. You know, people, I don't have a winter coat. We give away winter coats Saturday night specifically and Saturday morning. So I mentioned that we do Tuesday and Thursday. Saturday we do breakfast and dinner at 130 Cannon Street. It's behind Tropical Fresh. Mm-hmm. It's in a municipal lot, and it's well lit for breakfast and dinner. And we have a full it's like a bazaar. It's like a holiday bazaar. We got we have a full hot buffet, and then there's clothing and there's hygiene items, toilet paper, whatever you need. We've got that stuff out there.
It's incredible what you have.
Lost my train of thought again.
It's all good. No worries.
Yeah,
I do have a follow-up question based on what you said.
Good.
How can people reach out to donate?
On our website, there's a PayPal and a Zephy link. You can do one-time gift or you can do a recurring gift. Mm-hmm. That helps. But yeah. Or they can just call my name, call my number. You can mail in a check, whatever. I mean, we take – if you want to donate items, you want to donate baby wipes and sandwich bags – to either be collated or do it yourself and then drop them off. That's okay too. We have a donations coordinator. Her name is Kim Green. She's been volunteering with us for 7 years. Mm. She showed up 7 years ago and she was like, people were coming and just dropping off bags of clothing. And sometimes it was college kids, dirty laundry. You know, I mean, people do what they do. I don't judge it. I just know that my expectations are that I don't know what's in this bag. Let's find out if it's safe.
Yeah.
And clean.
Yeah.
And so we go from there. But Kim showed up, was hanging out with us for a little bit, and then she just turned her whole life into being a donations coordinator. And she's amazing at what she does.
Shout out to her. Amazing.
Yeah, shout out to Kim Green and her husband, because he's in as deep as she is. It's really amazing. They're really wonderful. Also, Karen Hughes out of Hyde Park and Sue Cerulli, they're our team lead for Tuesday night and Saturday morning. I can't be everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And God has sent these two women who do an amazing job of leading the Tuesday night and Saturday morning teams. And I Hope on a Mission couldn't do what they do without them. So they're really spectacular. Kim Green also does special projects coordination. So she will have a Rotary Club or Interact Club in schools. Girl Scouts, you know, any civic group or organization that wants to participate, we will give you a case, like 500 pairs of Bombas, because Bombas donates 5,000 pairs of socks every year to us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I know.
Buy Bombas.
They're a great company.
They are.
And I know they do a lot of outreach work. That's fantastic.
Their story is a lot of fun, too. They wanted to. They had high hopes of donating 1 million socks. They've donated over 10 million.
I was going to say, I think they well exceeded that at this point.
Yeah. So anyway, but we have projects. So if you have a civic group that wants to do something, LaGrange Middle School just did peanut butter and jelly. I don't remember what program that was, but there are a lot of needs and they can all be met together.
Yeah, that's great. Honestly, that is so, so good. For anybody out there who's watching or listening to this right now, as Karamia has said, it's like, use the talents you already have. You don't have to reinvent the wheel here.
If there are certain resources,
certain talents that you already have that you can pitch in, whether you can do it regularly, semi-regularly, maybe like, okay, I can do this. Yeah, once a year. You know,
nothing's
every little bit
small.
Helps. Yep. And especially in the conditions that we're in right now, any little bit helps. So, Karamia, thank you so much for being here on this episode of Walsh Wednesday. The time is coming to an end, yes. But with that being
said, hand warmers and emergency Mylar blankets.
I was about to say any last little nuggets. So, hand warmers and the nylon blankets. Any other last little nugget that you would like to share with the Walsh Wednesday listening audience?
Be kind to yourself. It helps you be kind to others.
That's a great way to end that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Karamia, thank you so much for being
here. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. I'm Connor.
I'm Karamia.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, MHA of Dutchess County, Foman Wash Car Wash, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Safe, LLP, Attorneys at Law, Prime Storage, and Walsh Valuation. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat.
You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.